This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. I want to thank you again for listening to the Magic Word and to these chats I have with all of my friends in magic around the world. You know, this is something out of love that I really put together and enjoy doing, but it also has its expenses associated with it as well, such as the domain charges, the server charges, the software and hardware costs, and other kinds of expenses related to the production of this podcast. And so I especially want to thank those people who are friends of the Magic Word who have chosen to donate through PayPal or through patreon.com/themagicword and have helped financially to support this podcast. So to those guys, I really thank you for your financial support, but also for those of you who tune in and listen every week or from time to time go back through the archives and search and find some other interesting chats that we've had or perhaps from the conventions that we've attended. That's another thing that I really like to attend magic conventions and bring you up-to-date information. One of the things I try to do when I attend those conventions is to speak with as many people as I can, not only the performers, but also the organizers, some of the dealers and the registrants, to give you a pretty good flavor as if that you were there. Not all of us can make all of the magic conventions. There are so many that are going on around the world. But for those few that I do attend, I do like to provide a little bit of content, I guess, here on the Magic Word, and post that on a daily basis. So after I listen to a lot of people that I talk with throughout the day, and then I go back to the room at night and then try to put this all together and then finally get it uploaded, it's often 3 o'clock or in the morning or so before I can finally get to bed or just about the crack of dawn so I can get a couple hours sleep and then start all over again. So the conventions for me are pretty full because a lot of times I may not get to the room until late because I'm up sessioning with some other guys or just chatting with somebody else or maybe learning a new card trick or a new move or hearing some new jokes or something. So I kind of like to share those with you too. So those are some interesting things that I don't even add those as being a particular one-off podcast. Those are really, I should say, a numbered podcast. The ones that I do with the conventions are those that come out just every day of the convention, and the ones that I do then each week actually are the numbered ones. That's why we are well over 250 of the numbered podcast, but if you add the ones in that have been for conventions, then there certainly are a lot more. Well, speaking of conventions, one of the guys that I wanted to talk with for a long time and spend a little bit of time sharing our conversation is Stan Allen. Stan, of course, has presented the Magic Live conventions for a number of years in Las Vegas. And, of course, you know Stan as being the editor of Magic Magazine. Many years ago, gosh, back in the 1980s, I guess it was, when he and I had talked, we had worked together at the Magic Island, had been friends, I'm not sure when he and I had first met, but he had asked me to be the convention editor for Magic Magazine, which I was for about 7 or 8 years with a regular monthly column that, again, would update everyone about different conventions that were happening around the world. And so these were are archived, of course, in the magazines. And then now, of course, with the digital Magic Magazine that he has, we've gone to more of a podcast with some of the conventions. So we do have the online convention guide, which I would recommend that if you are an organizer of a Magic convention, that's a free and easy way to post to your convention and let everyone know that you're going to be having a convention coming up, when it's going to be, where it's going to be, how much it costs. Well, just go over to themagicmagazine.com and you can click on the link that goes to conventions and you can see the conventions that are listed there around the world. And if yours is not listed, well, you can remedy that. It's easy to log in and put your information there. And aside from that, I was going to say that he has been, of course, publishing Magic Magazine for nearly 25 years. And this next year, in 2016, he will be hosting Magic Live, which will be a convention in honor of the 25 years of publishing Magic Magazine. So it'll be a look back over the 25 years and a look forward as to where he is going to take the magazine into the future. And speaking of that, that's a lot of what we talk about just print magazines versus digital and the convention and a whole host of other things. Lots of really great stuff here in this podcast that you'll hear with Stan Allen this week on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and today I have with me publisher, author, and convention organizer, General Bon Vivant Magician, Mr. Stan Allen. Hi, Stan.
Was that like an insult, that last part?
A bon vivant. No, you are just a man about town.
Yeah, you're talking to a guy who's chained to his desk most of the time. Man about town, my butt.
But you've been getting around. I mean, you've been traveling here of late in particular and performing at some different magic conventions worldwide. Yeah, so
The last couple of months I have been traveling much more. And that's got to stop.
Because when you get back, I'm sure that's why you have to wake up so early to try to fit in everything in a day.
Well, my wife always says, why do you go on vacation? Because the week before is hell and the week afterwards is hell. So what good is the... As good as the vacation, actually, in here.
Yeah, how good is heaven in between there, basically?
Better be a good heaven. Yeah. Nevertheless and wonderful.
Well, what? Yeah, because you have a deadline every month that's got this thing looming over you all the time, and I don't know that everyone really fully appreciates what a person who is a publisher, someone who has a deadline, has to go through.
Gosh, I'd love to know what that is. Well, it's funny because for me, excuse me, I look at Mike Cave and he publishes books. And so he's going to write this big, massive book. Mm-hmm. 3 years ago, he starts. And I'm saying, well, when will this book? I don't know. How big will it? I don't know. He just starts. And I'm like, how can you do that? The deadline is so far away, I'm not sure I would ever get to it.
Right.
Plenty of other things would get in the way. So there's a certain discipline in not having a deadline and still working on things. And for me, well, the deadline is always looming. I think it was John Mooring that said, you just finish an issue and you feel good about it, but you hear this rumbling noise and you look over your shoulder and this big millstone is rolling towards you and you're already behind.
Yeah. So yeah, there's some things certainly that you can keep up with and kind of have tucked away and ready to slip in, but still there are so many details and things that need to be finalized just before it goes out.
There's a lot. There is a lot. And, it's a machine to a certain degree, but the machine is designed to be timely, so you cannot plan everything. You can't have different magazines at different times have become columnists' magazines, and those columns are turned in months in advance. And, we just live in a much more timely society now. And I don't think – I think one of the things about a magazine and part of the problems of a magazine and newspapers too is how do you compete with this little device we all carry in our pocket that tells us everything all the time, whether we want it or not.
Right. Well, you're right. This is a society of immediacy and instant gratification and information. And so we have these things, as you say, we carry around all the time in which we're texted about this or that and finding out certain things that happen with such immediacy. We don't have to wait for an example about the obituary. I just woke up in the morning yesterday and found that Barry Richardson had died. Things like that, that used to be that you'd have to wait until Magic Magazine would come out and see that in the milestones.
There's no question. And I mean, before Magic Magazine, I had something, a little 8-page newsletter called Inside Magic. And people say, wow, wish that was around. And you say, it would be a dinosaur now. Mm-hmm. You have to wait a month to read 8 pages of little bullet points. You'd have gotten them already. And so I just think that over the last 10 years specifically, maybe 15, the roles of magazines have changed. And, and we all haven't adjusted yet to those changes.
I was going to ask about, as far as those changes go, that how will that continue to evolve? In other words, it seems like everyone's kind of looking to their left and right and saying, what are you doing? I don't know. What are you doing? Is there any direction or ultimate place you think that it's going to end up? Or what is your thought?
Well, I think that less magazines will survive. Mm-hmm. I don't think magazines, and I don't think books, they're not going to go away, at least not in the foreseeable future. Mm-hmm. That said, my grandchildren are 2 years old and 4 years old, and so, you know, most of their information that they learn at school and stuff is going to come through digital more and more and more, and maybe their children. So, I mean, there's a chance that these books might just become a total, you know, archaic thing. Magazines, I'm not really sure where they're going to go. I think newspapers are going to disappear. I think the concept of a newspaper is going to go away. And so magazines are, you know, they're not over the cliff. Newspapers are hanging over the cliff by their fingernails. Mm-hmm. Magazines are not over the cliff yet, but they're being pushed closer to the edge every day. And so to me, I think we have to offer, things that people wouldn't think about necessarily, wouldn't go searching the internet for, mm-hmm. A little bit more depth on them, or at least the option for depth. I mean, I used to, you know, the old school was kind of like watch the news or listen to the news on your radio, and a Russian submarine is on the bottom of the ocean. And then you don't hear about it during the day unless you happen to be tuned into the news. But that night you get that a Russian submarine's on the news. And the next morning your newspaper arrives and there's an article about the Russian submarine, and it's to a certain degree of detail. But then I would still get Time magazine 5 or 6, 7, 8 days later, and they would have an article on that, and they would show you how that submarine works and how does he by graphically they would show you. And they would then also say, how many of these kinds of submarines do we have, the United States, and where are they, and are they at risk as well? In other words, they took it graphically to the next step. And, you know, that's what we tried to do with Magic. We are always trying to take the story. David Copperfield signs a big contract, or Lance Burton signs a big contract. And now we want to dig into it more. And I think we just need to do that. And we also need, and this is a tricky one, the internet has certainly almost all, well, I won't say certainly, but it seems like the internet has almost all but eliminated the professional reporting, where in the past news sources or news services would have stringers in all different countries. Mm-hmm. And when something would happen, such as the disastrous events in Paris this last week, well, the French stringers would go right to work, and they would be running around checking and getting facts and shooting pictures, and they would be gathering the news the way professionals gather the news and get it up to AP, and then it would go out to the world. Well, now it's caught on somebody's, you know, iPhone, mm-hmm. instantly, and that's put out to the world. It's not edited. It's not necessarily representative correctly. It's not necessarily fair. And so, but those are the reports that fly out. Those things, you know, the first word out on it is going to be amateur reporters.
Right. Whether it's just a what we used to think of as a headline, which is really now just a few characters in a Twitter feed that someone would tweet out or something like that. Or like Arab Spring was something, I guess, that where there were people who were tweeting and sending out photos and everything and created this event and reported something that came as a result of all this reporting.
Right. And the example I use is Michael Jackson's death. When he died suddenly, for a couple hours, boy, it was all over the internet. Michael Jackson died. What? Are you sure? How do you know? And da 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 da. And then I remember reading a post that said, CNN confirmed Michael Jackson dead. Ah, so CNN still has an important role here.
A reliable source.
Mm-hmm. So in the Magic world, I'm not sure Magic magazine or any other magazine has quite the weight that CNN does, but that's what we should be, in my opinion, that's what magazines should be trying to achieve.
Well, I think you're right on several accounts there, in which that magazines certainly will give more in-depth but then reports than what you can hear on the radio or on the television news, because they're just snapshots of what's going on, of course. The newspapers can go into more depth. That's the advantage of having the newspaper. But there again, that's black and white and quickly and cheaply printed and distributed. Whereas magazines can take a lot more time and have a nice feel to it with a glossy, slick look and sharp images that would not be grainy like you'd see in a newspaper photo. And they can go into the same kind of detail plus other kinds of background stories that would be of interest, that would be featured, personality stories or whatever, that the newspapers may not have the time for because they're reporting hard news, if you will, whereas the magazines may go in different directions to report the hard news, plus maybe more of a personal story about this person's dog who also was involved and died. And so anyhow.
There's a order of perceived responsibility. And, you know, a television station or a radio station can come on with breaking news and saying it is reported that a mass, you know, that there's a shooting going on and being held and thing, and we're trying to get more information on it right now. I don't expect them to have every fact checked and right because it's right now, it's breaking. And the internet, the tweets out and all of that fast stuff, it's okay if it's wrong because 15 minutes later, the source will say, hey, update on that. We were wrong. It wasn't six people were killed. Only four people have been killed. And I must be morbid today because all my examples seem to be with death.
Had the tragedy in Paris you were talking about, and that was something that we were just getting bits of information. There were 90 people killed. That was 120. No, it was 160. No, it was 118 or whatever. So, yeah.
So the point is that as a buying public, if we will, whether we're paying for it or not, we have a certain tolerance for fast news, mm-hmm. not necessarily being 100% accurate. And it's okay if you come back on it and fix it. Now, newspaper, wait a minute, it should be a little more thought out. You had a little bit of time to get this together and you're professionals and et cetera, et cetera. And even still, there's a newspaper tomorrow and you can say a correction from yesterday's report. Here is this. Magazines, again, should be, you know, our rating should be a little higher because we've had this time to put it out. But even a magazine, if we screw up a magazine, next month we can fix it. And then you get to a book. And a book is supposed to have facts in it, carefully checked, because a book, there isn't a second book. If you're going to tell the life story of, you know, the amazing such and such,
you should have all the time.
You should have the facts down, right, because it's going to go between two covers up on somebody's shelf, and there isn't going to be a little addendum 2 days later that say, oh, and by the way, yeah, he was actually married to four women before he met her. What? You know, and so we hold different genres to different standards to different standards of credibility.
Well, and that kind of goes back to the deadline you were talking about, where that you have to check your facts very quickly, whereas like in Mike Caveney's case or others who are taking time to fact check and do the other information, that it takes a long time to birth a book, sure. Certainly longer than it does to birth a baby.
And in a magazine, you have a finite amount of time to produce it. Certainly at the end. When you start it, well, fine. But, you have a finite amount of time. And so I always think that publishing a magazine is a tug of war between what we want to do and what we have the time to do. Mm-hmm. And we're always in that tug of war position. And I'm always making decisions according to, well, yes, we would love to change that. Or yes, we would love to have bigger pictures of that and a lot more pages. But we go to press in 4 hours. So no, we're not going to. And
I think that deadlines are important because if you have something that you are striving to have accomplished by a certain date, you're going to work harder if you know that you have to have it finished by that date. Specifically, if you're going to be entering a contest at a convention, that you're going to work hard in order to have that competition act up perfect the way that you want it. Or if you have a particularly large show that's going to be for some company or whatever it's going to be, that you're going to work hard to make sure that you are up and ready and at peak performance by the time that you get to that show, as opposed to saying, well, I'm just going to work on an act and eventually I'll have a good act that I can take and present to these guys to maybe work a cruise ship or whatever it is. The point is that if you say, I'm going to do this by this certain date, that's why I always tell people that you need to have a 1 year, a 3 year, 5 year plan, a 10 year plan. What do you want to do? Because if you don't have an idea or a plan of where you want to go, then any direction is okay, but you're not really going to achieve anything great if you don't have a deadline of something that you want to achieve by a certain date.
It's all true. You know, the best thing about contests is not winning. What you really win is the deadline and the preparation to compete. Mm-hmm. So by the time you're stepping out on the stage, you actually won it. The second best thing about contests is the people that see you. So that happens when you're on the stage. The third important thing is whether you win or not. That might even be fourth or fifth. So, yeah, I think, I'm not a – it's kind of interesting. I think I'm very good – or pretty good, let's say that. Let's be a little bit humble there. Mm-hmm. I think I'm pretty good very early on in the project, the dreaming days. And I'm not bad at the end days where it's like, okay – we have to find a way to get this all done in this amount of time. In between those, yeah, I'm not as good at. I don't see everything black and white. I see most things in gray. And so I'm always looking for that better answer. I think our battle cry is here is how do we do this better? How do we do it better? And
you have so, you try to improve on that every month, or do you have a goal saying, okay, we're going to change the format or do something different next year with our January issue?
Right. It's funny. In the magazine, because that deadline is always there, you don't ever really have that. I'm dreaming about what we're going to do in the January issue, because where are we? The middle of November. The December issue mailed, I think, yesterday. So it was at press 7 days ago. And we're now working on the January issue, but there's not a ton of dream time in that. Dream time is you sort of look ahead and you say, okay, what do we want to accomplish next year? Where do we want to guide the magazine to go? And yet you still have these constant deadlines coming at you. So that's a little tougher to do. In the convention planning, no, you have a full year or 2 years. And so there is a substantial amount of dream time. We call it dream and scheme. And then, you know, you get to the last 2 months, 3 months, and it's like, yeah, we got to do it now. Mm-hmm. So that in between though, where, gosh, we should really line this stuff up. And one of my staff said, yeah, the problem with Stan is that he won't make a decision on something because he's not happy with what it is, but he doesn't know how to fix it. So we'll keep trying and trying, and then eventually it'll just go on the shelf. And at the last minute, he'll come forward and say, hey, I have an idea about this. And so the staff guy was saying, the problem is that he's usually right at that time, and that just pisses us all off. So I don't know if that's true or not, but I do know that we will take a concept and we'll keep it on the boards for Magic Live, especially for a long period of time and just keep nurturing it, nudging it along. And are we going to do it or are we not going to do it? I don't answer that question yet. And sometimes we do those things and sometimes we don't do them. They drop by the wayside. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we come back at it later. So for me, just when you're talking about deadlines, the magazine deadline is a lot more structured because we do it every single month. And the Magic Live deadline, you would think, would be starting to get structured after we've done 7 of these things. But the fact that you only do it every couple of years doesn't allow for the same kind of structure.
Right. Well, I want to talk about the conventions here in just a moment, but finishing up, I guess, kind of on the magazine and the deadlines and the dreaming part of that, I understand the deadlines, you really don't have a lot of time to sit and dream and scheme, as you say, for how you might change the magazine or the format or the columns or whatever you want to do. But I would think that is still an important thing of setting time aside to try to keep moving it forward. Otherwise, it does become stale.
Well, yes, there's no question. But sometimes it's like a Ouija board where you're sitting there with it and you don't realize it's moving.
Yeah.
You know, you're creeping. You're just kind of or a car that's slowly pulling to the right, and suddenly you find yourself in the dirt, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's the danger of publishing, is on a schedule like we are, is that you don't sit down with every issue and say, great, how do we reinvent the wheel?
Yeah.
And you don't do that. You can't do that. And so you come up to a certain point with certain milestones, and you say, all right, next August, we will publish the 300th issue of Magic Magazine, 25 years. And so a year or 2 years before that, you start saying, big milestone. We should rethink what we're doing with the magazine, where magazines are at in the world today. You know, and so we use those milestones, those certain milestones, to reevaluate the overall business. At the same time, you've got to keep doing the business. And mm-hmm. That's my role in the business. The most important role I play is the visionary role of directing us towards things. And it's not always the role I spend the most time on, because I'm busy, you know, getting us. I'm driving them. I'm supposed to be navigating our course at the same time I'm driving the boat.
Well, do you have something in mind that you are going to make any kind of major changes? I mean, I remember when it used to be Staple Bound, then you went to Perfect Bound. That was a major shift, certainly. But anything like in your 25th year thinking?
I think we should go back to papyrus or possibly stone. Chiseling on stone.
Chiseling on stone, yeah.
Let's see what the post office will do with the book rate on that.
Well, you had said to me some time ago that eventually the way that magazine publishing, in particular Magic magazines in the U.S. are going, that we could see a consolidation such that there might just be two or three magazines or places for that. Certainly, I know that from the IBM standpoint and working with the Linking Ring and seeing some of its numbers, and I'm sure that MUM magazine is similar in that the advertising rates are not really sustaining the magazine and cannot into the far future or even near future. So there's got to be something, I would think, in which that for an example, those two organizations might combine their journal. You've seen, of course, where that the conventions have been combining every few years, and they're going to be doing more of that, I believe. And so what you're saying, I think, will come to pass. It may not have come to pass as quickly as what I think it may have predicted earlier, but I think that's eventually the only way it can go.
Right. I know that, 8 years ago, maybe. I think Richard Kaufman on one of the Genie forum things, somebody said, did you see this? And they sent it over to me. And Richard Kaufman was saying that in 5 years' time, we won't have four major magic journals in the United States. Mm-hmm. And I don't really take part in these forums. I find that it's not my playing field. And I tend to get my foot firmly implanted in my mouth if I try anything there. So I never post anything, but it was so tempting after he had said, yeah, we won't have four magazines in the future. And I just so wanted to write, gosh, we're going to miss you. And then I thought, no, that's a bad idea. Let's not. Richard, right now.
Well, a lot of times jumping into a forum is like wrestling with the pig. Of course, you get dirty and the pig enjoys it.
Yeah. Well, and also, somebody once told me in law cases, going after somebody is like dancing with the bear. And what he meant was that, yeah, you can go dancing with the bear. But when you get tired of dancing, that doesn't mean the bear is tired of dancing. And so I thought, before you go legally going after somebody, you better be realizing you might be in it for a lot longer than you want to be mm-hmm. in it. And the forum conversations, I do very little with that. But the point, what Richard was saying is that, yeah, the handwriting's on the wall, that as numbers are coming down, that eventually the logical answer would be for, MUM, Linking Ring, to somehow merge. Maybe the whole organizations merge. And what I find interesting about that is when I mention that to people that run the organizations, they laugh at me. That'll never happen. That'll never happen. And yet, when I mention that to members of the organization that are just, yeah, where you live here, and, well, you live in Houston. You have an SAM and an IBM in Houston?
We do.
Yeah, and how many people go to both of them? I'm going to say quite a few.
We do.
And if you get to those members and they said, what would you think about if we combined these into one great club or whatever? They don't laugh at you for that. But the organizations, the actual people that run the organization, they're the ones that dig their heels in. And so maybe there is someday will be a grassroots movement of members coming up and saying, come on, this is stupid. And if you're running conventions with low numbers, well, I say low numbers.
Comparatively, the way that they used to be.
Compared to what it used to be, low numbers. SAM would get 700-800, and sometimes on a good year, 1,000, up to 1,400s, which when they only had 6,000 or 7,000 members compared to the IBM's 15,000 members, that's, you know, if good. They got a convention of 1,000 people, that's 1/6 of their membership. Mm-hmm. And IBM, though, there was a time they were getting 1/10, which was 1,500 people.
Right.
And now they're not. And
I think all conventions are experiencing that, though.
Well, conventions are experiencing it for a different reason. Are we done with magazines? Because conventions are that's a whole nother kettle of something.
That does get into another kettle. You're right about that. Yeah, as far as magazines, just kind of, I guess, transitioning over there.
I'll tell you, I think the answer for us is we're going to merge with the New Tops and Magic Manuscript, and then we'll be good.
So you're going to have Sid Lorraine come back and write for you?
I would love to have Sid Lorraine come back and write. Sid Lorraine was great, one of the greatest.
He was. You know, I think that I always think back to that classic of his in which he was doing the medicine pitch.
Absolutely.
When I first saw that, I fell hook, line, and sinker. I thought I was going to fall on the floor laughing. It got
me. I saw it at Abbott's, and my jaw was on the floor, and I'm turning to my buddy Mike, and he looks at me and says, "Don't feel bad. We've all fallen. So anyway, that's what we're going to do. Who knows, though? I do think, though, that there will be a Magic Magazine.
You're going to continue, obviously, beyond 25. That's not like 25 and out, and thanks for the memories.
I refuse to answer on the grounds that it might tend to incriminate.
We can neither confirm nor deny.
Says my friend, I'm 65 years old. I'm not promising anything, you know.
Well, this Saturday I'll turn 64.
Okay. See, well, you're just a young pup still. So
yeah, thank you. Oh, man.
I don't know. No, I'm at a definite point. You know, when you get to these kinds of milestones, it's not like a marriage. You know, your anniversary comes up and you don't kind of say, well, let's reevaluate this. Was this a good idea?
Yeah, when you have an anniversary and you're out to dinner saying, you know, how's this been for you these last 25 years?
Should we continue or what do you think here? You know, this does not instill confidence in your mate.
No.
So without, you know, deliberately trying to undermine my entire operation here, 25 years does make you think and makes you think about, okay, how many more years do I want to do it? How many more years do people want me to do it?
Mm-hmm. Have you been approached by others who might say, hey, we'd like to, you know, take over and be the editor, or you'd like to consider selling it to us? I mean, has it been a larger conglomerate?
I have been approached by – I've had conversations with one or two – actually two people. But it's – you know, that's just conversations and stuff at this point. And the thing is that Magic Magazine grew very quickly. I believe in the philosophy of you don't make promises, you just do it. And you're not begging for support. You're putting something out there and you wait to see if they support it.
Mm-hmm.
So many years ago, I was approached regarding one of the club journals, and 20 plus years ago. And they said, how do we turn our journal? And I said, well, the answer is to do it, to put and commit the money to do 12 issues and do it at the standard that you want to do it. Don't make promises that it's all going to be in color. Do it in color. Don't make promises that if you get more advertising, we'll add more pages. Add the pages and pull the advertisers into it. And at the end of 12 months, if it doesn't work, well, then it wasn't meant to be and it wasn't ever going to work. And that's my philosophy. And we did that with Magic Live. We did a better convention than we could afford to do for the first 2 or 3 years. And the money followed. So it's a build it, they will come. Mm-hmm. The magazine was the same way. We took it to a level and to a standard, and the community supported it. And so to reach a point where possibly the numbers could go low enough where you can't do it. I mean, other magazines have changed their paper stock, cut down on the number of pages maybe, or one magazine now is only doing 10 issues per year. And you say, do I really want Magic Magazine to have to fight those battles and go down that road? We're not there yet. Mm-hmm. But if all four magazines stay in business and competing, yeah, we're – what did my son say? We are in a race to the bottom, and the last one standing will survive. But at what point and what level and what will the paper quality be and how much color will there be? And can we afford to pay writers? Can we afford to have an art director? These are all questions that are unanswered.
Well, why do you think, though, that the new Tops and Magic Manuscript had fallen? I mean, those were good magazines, good writers, good material. You think they just kind of got tired or what?
Well, New Tops was a columnist magazine.
Yeah, it was by Abbotts, basically, wasn't it?
Right, and it was a I won't say it was a mouthpiece for Abbotts, but what they did was they hired, like, you know, they got like 12, 15 columnists. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't so much they were publishing a magazine. They were printing a bunch of columnist reports. And, you know, when you had Senator Clark Crandall fighting with Lou Derman, and it was going back and forth every month, and you couldn't wait to read what's Crandall going to say back at this?
Right.
You know, that was fun stuff, but that was a time and a dated. And the people that they had writing got older and died, and – and so the magazine didn't replenish itself with new voices and things. So I also think that the style, the print style, it was an 11x17 offset, black and white. Magic Manuscript came on the scene with Adam Fleischer and showed color. Right. We had suddenly had a color magazine, and it was like, whoa, hang on here. Magic Magazines for many years were just lagging because there was no competition and no requirement to it. Competition is a really good thing. I wrote a whole editorial about competition, and Cesario Pelez from Le Grand David sort of beat me up one day about competition, and that it's a magic world. Everything is fun. Everything is love. We're one big family. It shouldn't be about competition. And I disagree, because competition makes things better. When Doug Henning passed away, see, I'm on a theme today, aren't I? I don't know.
Death.
Oh, you know, is this like Black Friday or something?
Skull and crossbones.
I'm going there, I guess. Yeah. So, be sure and brand this, you know, with a warning. You know, not really. If you're having a great day, yeah, don't listen to this.
Yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to tell people, hey, don't listen to this podcast.
Yeah, don't. You know what? If you advertise, don't listen to Stan Allen's podcast. He's a little bit morbid about the whole world. I bet people would say, oh, I got to hear what the hell that is. An idiot. So the thing is like, take as an example, Doug Henning passed away. Doug Henning passed away, and we were, let's see, whatever it was, a Tuesday, we were going to press Thursday morning. And Richard Kaufman had Genie magazine. If you had gone back, if that had happened 5 years before, when the Larsons were experiencing problems getting an issue out, mm-hmm. And the health situation, and the, you know, Eric and Dante were trying to, you know, shoulder the burden of putting out the magazine, but I'm not ever sure it was their full passion and their calling. And so, you know, it was struggling. The success of Magic Magazine was a combination of what we did over here at Magic Magazine and the fact that the timing was that Genie was, you know, in its lowest ebb at that, was heading into that lowest ebb because of Bill's health and his passing away. And that was the heartbeat of that magazine. And that's why we grew so fast. Well, anyway, had it been back then, it would have been tempting to put a little notice in our thing saying, hey, Doug Henning passed away, and next month we're going to do a whole Doug Henning salute. That sounds like something that would happen in the magic world, doesn't it?
Sure.
Yes. You don't really have to answer those. I'll just answer them for you.
Thank
you. Like.
I'll just sit back and kind of listen to you.
Yeah, I'm just imagining you just sitting back and not saying anything. Okay, so is there somebody I haven't insulted on this podcast? Okay, good.
We were talking about competition.
I am.
Yeah, it's important that you have competition. I was just talking with Gazzo this week, and he was saying, and I was saying about the competition of other street performers, and he just looked at me flatly and said, I have no competition. And he's not saying that with great bravado, but it's just that I'm competing against myself, basically. And I said, so are you competing against your last show? Did you want
that's a different subject here. Yeah. So we'll go to that one if you like in a little bit. Getting back to what I was talking about.
Yeah, it's all about you now.
Oh, this is all about me. okay, so who else have we offended? I'm making a list here of who we pissed off.
You're going to have a double-sided.
Yeah, exactly. But that's not what we did. And we stopped the presses, so to speak. We called the printer and said, we're coming in 2 or 3 days late. And in those 3 days, we put together an entire Doug Henning. 16-some-odd pages, colored graphs, artwork, story, timeline, him on the cover, bumped the whole cover thing out. We reinvented the magazine in those 3 days. Mm-hmm. And we did that because we had competition. And this was a point where we said, hey, wait a minute. We have an opportunity here to compete and to, you know, look at different times. Genie magazine has the advantage. At different times, we have the advantage. I'm just listing Genie and Magic because we're kind of the head-to-head competitors
right
here. And so in this case, you say, wow, we have an opportunity to do this. We should absolutely do it. Throw the extra energy at it. And who wins in that? The reader wins because of the competition. And it's, you know, the magazines are all competing for readers. We're all competing for advertisers. We're all competing for places on shop counters. We're all competing for writers. We're competing for subjects. A guy comes on the scene, and we all want to write about him.
And all so, those are limited and finite.
Yes, they are. They absolutely are.
That's kind
and
of
so,
redundant, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Limited and finite.
So anyway, so competition, you know, is a really good thing. So if we only had one Magic magazine, I'm not sure it would be as good.
Good point. Well, and so you've been doing that then for 25 years and then kind of going into where this should logically go. Of course, you're going to be celebrating that with the convention coming up.
Celebrating it. And so I absolutely guarantee there will be a 300th issue of Magic Magazine. So I will commit myself to that. How's that?
That's the commitment to at least completing 300 copies.
Yeah, people that have subscriptions that go well past that are probably saying, hey, hang on.
Wait a minute, I've paid for another 5 years on this.
I'll add their name to the list of people that I've scared now. Good. I hope to hell nobody listens to this podcast.
We have a broad listenership that's worldwide. I mean, I can count them by the dozens.
Bam.
So,
wow.
There we
all
go.
All right, waka waka. We need a drummer for this conversation.
Yeah.
All right, next.
Too many rim shots. So next, we're talking, yes, about the convention, and that kind of goes along with deadlines and making plans, as you said, dream and scheme, where that you have made plans for conventions. Like this last year was one that kind of popped up, but was not really expected because you were going to wait and do the 25th, and then I guess because of the 360 thing, that a lot of fodder in here I'm throwing at you.
Just
pick up anything you want.
Yeah.
Run with it.
You know, I plot out in my head 5 or 6 years ahead where our conventions are going to be. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it always turns out that way. But I have right now, I know where we're going, you know, where I think we're going for the next 5, 6, 7 years. And somewhere back in 2010, I think it was, or 11, I sort of laid out the idea that we were going to do 2011, 2013, and 2016. So we would take 3 years so that we could get that 25th anniversary celebration in. And, you know, speaking candidly, the convention is important to the magazine. The magazine used to be very important to the convention, but the convention is just kind of grown into its own entity. And now it's important to the magazine. So to go 3 years without that event happening, without the, you know, the profits from the convention coming to it, all of that, you know, it just, as we got closer to it in 2013, we started to develop a smaller event. And also, I was a sponsor for EMC, the Essential Magic Conference out of Portugal, mm-hmm. which was an internet with 33 people in a room, and Luis de Matos, Marco Tempest, David Britland, and the guys, great job, did it first class.
Fantastic.
And, you know, Luis lost money.
Well, he went into it knowing that his business model was showing he was going to have a loss.
Well, he did. And
and he knew he was going to do it for 3 years, too.
Right. He knew he was going to do 3 years. Magic Magazine was a sponsor, and I was there for all three of them. And Luis and Marco knew I was looking at ultimately we could only grow so many people coming to a convention. Maybe we want to have an online following that's even larger than that, following what's going on at our convention. And that made sense to me at the time. And so the whole idea was we created this thing called M360, which was Conversations in Magic. And the idea was is basically it was an EMC, except with a studio audience and a staging. Well, in 2013, we thought we would broadcast elements of Magic Live. And what we found out was it's much harder to broadcast a live event than it is to stage an event for broadcast.
Really?
Yes.
I wouldn't think that. I would think you just put a camera on it and flip a switch.
Well, and that's not doing it better, is it? That's doing what anybody can do. And
yeah.
Our philosophy is that if anybody could do it, we're not excited about doing that because chances are somebody will do it. And they'll do it cheaper. And so we don't want to do that. We want to do something so good that nobody will, you know, be able to compete with us. That was the idea with Magic Magazine. I felt that Magic Magazine at the time raised the bar for what magazines were doing. And I remember Amy Stevens, when I told her I was going to launch a magazine, she said, are you going to pull, because remember, this is 1990.
Yeah.
Are you going to pull Magic Magazine? Are you going to pull magazines in our industry into the 1990s? And I thought, you know, if we pull them into the late 70s, we'd probably have a big advantage over everything else.
That's right.
That's what, you know, that's what happened to Tops and I think, you know, and other things. They get sort of stuck on one thing and they stay there. And with Magic Magazine, we're constantly, every time, you know, or Magic Live, I should say right now, looking for a way to do it better. Recently, I was challenged to write a passion statement. It was by a teacher of mine who became a very high-ranking officer at Disney, and now he's retired. He's got some projects, and he says, well, send me a paragraph of what you're passionate about, just a passion statement. And a week later, I'm still going, what am I passionate about? I'm passionate about a lot of things.
It's hard to narrow it down just to one or two?
Yeah, and it was my daughter, Christy, my oldest daughter, who said, what are you talking about? That's easy. Your passion statement's easy. I said, all right, do give. You know, passion statement? And she said, your passion is doing something better than it's ever been done before, even if you were the one who did it before. And I think she's right. That's what gets me excited. Mm-hmm. And so if we take registration and we say, yeah, registration was kind of crazy last year, we should do it better. Now we've got to reinvent how we do registration from the top, you know. And we pick 3 or 4 things every year, and they're up on the board that we just didn't think we did that as well as it should be done. Last year at Magic Live, we didn't communicate well enough with our guests. They didn't know what was going on all the time. That's a mistake. This year, we have got ways to communicate. We will so over-communicate, they'll be sick of us by the time this is over. So that's what we do, and that's what I can't even remember why we got on this subject. But
well, we're talking about also vision. Yeah, I think that's something that every time when you're trying to improve over it, you've told me before that you think people come to the convention because they want to see you walk this tightrope to see if you're going to fall. And if you do, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine because it's something different and you're trying something new all the time and it will not be repeated. Like I remember that thing we had that was like Brigadoon a few years back where we had the museum that had Copperfield things and Siegfried and Roy, all these pieces of memorabilia that were fantastic. And if you missed it that night thinking, well, I'm just going to go out and see a show, I'll catch it tomorrow morning, is gone. I mean, and that's never going to come back and be repeated in the future. Things like that, I think, are just amazing.
But that was the second time we had done a museum. We'd done one on our 10th anniversary. We did that one on our 20th anniversary. And now we're coming up to our 25th anniversary. And we're looking about different ways of presenting that or better ways of presenting that, which is pretty tough because Lupe Nielsen headed that up for us and she's a ball of energy and she did a fantastic job. And and now we look at it and say, great, how do we do that even better for our 25th anniversary? And that's that competing. I don't look at other magic conventions and say I'm competing with these different conventions. I think we're kind of over here to the left. And that was the surprising thing. We did the first convention in 2001, and I had no intention of doing any others. In fact, the SAM called up and asked if they could use the little card trading game that we have done. Mm-hmm. And I said, sure, you can use anything we did because I'm never going to do it again. And then nobody did. Nobody followed any of our examples and our ideas. And so when it came time to do another one in 2004, I said, you know, I really do want to do another one. Well, gosh, I still had everything available to me. Mm-hmm. And so I just started – I had to make a decision right then, though. Big decision was, do we throw everything out that we did before, everything, and create a whole new thing so that when you come to Magic Live, you have no idea what is going to happen, upside down everything, no registration at all. Your picture was on the cover of the magazine last time for your badge. This time we have no badges. You know, I mean, we could do that. And then the thing was is that after thinking about it a lot, I came away with that magicians, like, and most people, like to see something new, but they also like to see something familiar. And so we started building on that, and each year we try to throw something crazy and new at them. Going back to the EMC idea, the broadcasting, we got off that. Mm-hmm. It's much harder. I mean, we don't want to just throw a camera in the back of the room. We want to have – and EMC set the standard. They were a 3-4 camera shoot with a director, and it was very well done. And I think that should be the standard. This isn't set up your computer with a camera on it and shoot a home video blog. There's a place for that. But if you're asking people to pay for something, $70, $80, $90, $100, boy, I think it's got to be really well done. So we designed M360, where it would be – the stage would be a studio set basically, and you would come into that six times and see six different programs. And it was going to be a total of 360 minutes of material. There was some crazy ideas to this thing. One was we only wanted it up for 15 days. And the idea is we wanted to create urgency. We wanted it. It's timely. We want you to go look at it right now. It is Brigadoonish a little bit. It won't be there after 15 days. It's the Night Circus. I don't know if you've read that book, but the circus just disappears one day. And so you have to go see it, and you then talk about it with other people, because just seeing doesn't mean squat. Talking about the ideas that are presented, whether you agree with them, whether you disagree with them, it's the conversation. It's the rocks. You know, a bunch of rocks flying by each other that are hitting each other, and sparks are flying off, and now new ideas are coming off from those and splitting the atom. And, you know, that's what it should be about. That's what a true conference is about. So that was our concept. And there I stood, 2013, announcing no convention until 2016. My staff has one of the pictures of me actually saying that, and underneath it says, liar. And so I said, hey, I told him I was never doing a convention ever again anyway. Nobody believes me anymore.
I've already set the precedent of lying.
It's just, you know, I believe it when I say it. And we had the set designed idea, and we had the logo. And then something happened at Magic Live that turned it all upside down. And that was in 2013, we themed it Friends. Mm-hmm. And we didn't go over the top with our theme, but we had games that you played with friends. And we had shows based on Friends. The Long Beach Mystics had been Friends all these years.
The theme was clear.
The theme was clear. It wasn't as well defined as, say, The Adventure was in 2015, but the theme was clear. Mm-hmm. And we kept sort of reminding you about the theme of Friends. Immediately following the convention, the feedback I got from people was, it was so much fun hanging out with our friends. Or I made new friends. I have more new friends than I've ever made at a convention before. But the feedback was all about friends and friendships. Mm-hmm. And it was like a light bulb went on my head. And I ignored it like I tend to do. And I kept drawing up M360 for the next 2 or 3 months. And the light bulb kept getting in the way. And what the light bulb was telling me was, we have enough stuff on the internet. There's already more stuff on the internet that we can possibly watch, let alone absorb. What we need is those sparks coming off rocks running together and hitting each other, and those things happen in real time, in real life, in a real place. And so it dawned on me, no, I'm not after the internet market. I'm after old school. I'm after putting people in a building and having them hang out with each other and create new things together and sit there and show each other what they've been up to. And so it just dawned on me, bam, there's no question. We don't want to do an internet convention. We want to do a live convention better than it's ever been done before. And at that particular time, we had done a couple good conventions, and yet we wanted to do it even better. And that's why we threw in 2015. Actually, 16 had been planned. We had been working on 16. 15 was the rush.
Yeah.
And we took 15 totally away from the magazine. All the other conventions have been about Magic Magazine coming to life, bring the pages of the magazine to life, or do things at the convention and then put them onto the pages. It's a nice little mix that we do. 15 was not that way. 15 was the adventure. And we challenged you to meet new people and to be curious and to ask questions, whether it's from the performers that are on the stage and presenters, the guy standing behind the dealer's room, or the person sitting next to you, or your good friend you're having lunch with. Ask them about something that you don't know about them. And go to things that you didn't think you would enjoy going to. And from all the feedback, people got into that. Mm-hmm. So the adventure, we put down as a success in 2015.
Now, but
I can run a list of things we did wrong and screwed up. But overall, it was a pretty exciting event. And now 2016, we will go back to being about the magazine and looking back over 25 years and looking forward as to where they will all go in the future.
I still think it's a good concept for an internet convention. That it may not have been financially successful with Luis for the EMC. It may or may not have been with the 360 had you gone forward with, but I still think that there is a place for that. That is, I think, a great concept.
You go.
Well,
have a good time.
Thanks a lot.
And,
yeah, I got time to do that.
I think we would have annoyed a lot of people by not making it. I bought it. It's available. It should be available forever. And I don't like that theory. And I think we could have done it well. The ideas on the board, some of those ideas have now creeped into conventions and will continue to creep into conventions. But yeah, I just think that for us, old school, mm-hmm. old school, let's go live. And the name of our convention is Live.
Magic so, Live, sure, of course.
Yeah, it is. So that's what I know. Nothing.
That's the concept for continuing forward into the future. Well, going then on to conventions in general, we kind of touched on that a little bit earlier, and I would like to discuss that just a little bit then also, just as far as the future of conventions and what's been happening. Again, you'd mentioned earlier about how that the attendance has fallen off for a variety of reasons, and I think that we might see this continue along that path. I think as we become more socialized, if you will, with social media where people can go to forums, they can watch YouTube videos, they can text each other.
Yeah, I mean, when I say attendance has fallen off.
But not for yours. I mean, yours has always been, I say yours, the Magic Live Convention has traditionally been one that is the largest in the North American continent.
It has been, and I'm very surprised, because I was concerned. We've never done one back-to-back years. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, we announced it on the last night. I announced it on the last night of Magic Live. And that announcement was always an option. That if I wasn't happy or we weren't happy with the event that we had done, we would not announce 2016. We would regroup and decide. And we were happy overall with what it was done. But believe me, I was holding my breath on stage when I put up the boards, had the boards put up, and it was announcing. We did it with a play on, we messed around a little. We announced the 25th anniversary of Magic Magazine was going to be August 14th through the 16th in 2017. And then I looked over and said, oh, I'm sorry, this is wrong. And I took the 7 from 2016 and the 6 from 16, and I switched them. So it was now August 14th through 17th, 2016. Well, when the numbers were revealed and it was 2 years away, the crowd cheered, and I now started to breathe better. I was really like, what if they go boo? We don't want another convention next year.
Yeah,
this would not be a good thing. And I switched the numbers and it got even bigger.
But cheers, you were having the, I guess, a meeting or meetings during the convention with your staff, then saying, how do you think it's going? Do we need to tweak this or that? And then coming to the point saying, should I make this announcement or not? Yes, I think it's successful enough that we should try it again.
I'm not sure they knew. That was something on my head, though. My top key play, the two on the chart, it's me, and then just Rory. Below that is Rory Johnson is director in charge of producer of content, associate producer of content. And Steven, my son, is associate producer, technical, all things technical. Mm-hmm. And so the three of us had certainly had conversations because Steven needed to know which way we were going to go, and Rory needed to know. And, you know, it all worked out fine. And then we opened up registration on September 15th, and where are we now? 2 months into it, and we are, I think, 78, 79% sold out. We have a total of 1,600 slots, not a single one more, and 1,247, 1,250 are gone. And so, no, we have taken off. I don't get it. And as far as the other conventions, if we want to talk about last year was a very difficult year because you had FISM, a very expensive trip for people to go to. Mm-hmm. You had Magic Live, hadn't been here for a couple of years. And you still had the IBM, the SAM, the Genie convention. You had a TOM, with some new thinking ideas. New thinking? That's not even words, but anyways. Trixie put some great things on it, I think. And, I wonder about the future. Here's the thing. I don't think there is a future if you're going to do the same convention over and over and over again. I don't think there is a future for conventions if you're going to draw the talent from the same pool and everybody's drawing it, that this guy has a new book out, so I want to work every Magic convention there is this summer. Mm-hmm. Then right there, we can't use you, you know? So I really think that conventions need to be rethought more and more. You need to have people dedicated to them, and it's hard for an organization because there's an amateur approach to it, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean it's not your job. You earn your living somewhere else. When people come up to me and thank me for doing Magic Live, I'm a little perplexed because I kind of say, you know, it is my job. You know, this isn't a hobby. Yeah. I make money. And we want our convention to make money. The people that work on it make some money. That's the idea. It's a professional convention, and I found – that if you do something well or try to do something well, the Magic community will support you. And, you know, we're not a cheap convention as far as registration. We are as far as hotel room, which balances it all out. And we're very lucky that way because we have a hotel, you know, where you're going to spend maybe with tax and, you know, all the extra room charges and everything, tip, gratuity, whatever, out the door, $60. Mm-hmm. Versus, you know, I just went to the LA History Conference and it was $169 base rate over $200 by the time you got out the door per night. The difference is that we can do it for $60 and now we can charge more registration, which means we can put more audiovisual into the thing so it's a better event, which means we can bring that FISM winner from overseas. It costs us more money, which means we can write a show and spend all the energy and money into producing our own shows. How many conventions really produce their show? We do these documentary lives where we write the show. We start with a blank board and we create a script. And if you want to compete for big numbers, you're going to have to do stuff like that. You're going to have to, in fact, you're going to have to do crazier stuff than that.
But you guys are the same team, basically, that comes up with these ideas, whereas in some cases, say like a TAOM, for an example, in which that each year that there's a different city, whether it's Austin or Dallas or Houston or wherever, is going to be hosting, and so you have a different committee, and so they have different ideas they may be bringing in, but unfortunately, it seems that they still have the same playbook.
Of course, but there's an advantage there, too. There's an advantage and a disadvantage. If you go to the Collector's Weekend, the same team would kind of throw it every year in Chicago, but then a group would come along like Bill Smith, John Mooring, Bob Rossi did one in Vegas, and the guys in Baltimore, the club there, got all together and did one in Baltimore. And these guys all looked at it like, I'm never going to do another one of these, so I'm going to pull out every stop I've got, every idea I've got, and try to make it the best ever. The difference, though, I think, for Magic Live is that we are really students of conventions here. My son and I we've gone to expos on convention planning, event planning. Mm-hmm. I read a monthly magazine, funny enough, on meetings. And, I don't get a ton, but you know, you do find out, oh, look what they did. Look at the graphic they did. Oh, wow, that's really nice. What are the images and stuff? And so it just encourages you. That's your competition. My competition is not the other magic conventions because we're using a different format. The other magic conventions are still on the format. And there's nothing wrong with this format because people enjoy it. And the format of you bring in a guy and the guy does close up and stage and does a lecture and sells his stuff in the back of the room. And that's how this guy can make enough money. You know, and now you have 12, 15, 18 people like that. That's your convention.
Right.
We have in excess of 50 presenters and performers.
Wow.
50, 53, 56 on any given moment. There's a guy that will bring somebody in to do 5 minutes. That's all. You know, mm-hmm. or to do one talk. We're starting to use a few people that do something on the stage, like Charlie Fry, because we wanted him to talk about character. So we had him perform one night and talk about character another day. But we didn't use Charlie in close-up also. And we didn't have Charlie do his own lecture and sell notes in the back. So we have a different model, a totally different model. And the basic magic convention model depends upon a great venue and bringing in great talent. And so,
well, a lot of time that has to do, of course, with the budget that they have. And a lot of the regional or smaller areas that will host conventions don't have that. And also in Vegas, you have a lot of top magicians who live there. So number one, you don't have the travel involved. And then, of course, with the contacts of saying,
but you look at those 53,
yeah,
53, 54, 55 people, 4, 5 from Las Vegas, maybe 6.
Oh.
Yeah, we're not overly heavy. We pulled a little heavier this time because we did, what did we do? 9 people in our close-up show to do some magic. And so we did use Johnny Thompson and Paul Vigo and, you know, some other people from Vegas. But we also brought in, you know, David Benn and Eric Mead and Julie Yang and R. Paul Wilson. And so
Jared Koff.
But if you go back to this regional idea, here's the thing about the way I see the future of magic, conventions anyway. I think to compete for large numbers, you've got to reinvent. And this would be my advice to the IBM or SAM. You got to reinvent if you want to go for bigger numbers. Mm-hmm. You want to have a large group of people. I don't think the same convention style works as much. You want to have a more regional feel convention. You want to have a smaller convention. Those things work great. There's no reason to reinvent that. And there's no reason to pour your energy in that. You hang it on 5 or 6 really good, talented people. And I think that the 300, 400 convention, maybe even 500 convention, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a wonderful little convention. And you just need to make it a boutique convention. You need to make it a smaller event.
Well, I see what you're saying, certainly. If you're going to be having a convention with the larger organizations, the IBM and SAM, where you have an older membership, if you continue with the same kind of convention activities and the same format, you're going to continue to lead these people to the grave until finally there are no registrants left. But if you reinvent that, you're going to start to pull younger people, certainly, which leads me to a question. What would you say is your median age attendee?
Deceased.
Well, I'm not talking about the IBM and SAM. I mean for Magic Magazine. I mean Magic Live.
What we used to say about Alaska audiences, average age deceased, or the old folks and their parents.
Yeah.
I am one of those folks now. So what happened here?
You look at Dan and Dave. They have Magic Con, and they have a young group of people. I would say probably in their 20s, a median age.
Yeah, Magic Con, I wouldn't say it's quite that low, but it might be 30. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong about that. I know the first Magic Con, somebody stepped out on stage and said, how many people have never been to a magic convention before? And I looked around the room and it was about 25%. Hmm. That's an enormous number.
Yeah.
If you came to Magic Live, have never been to a magic convention at all, 1%?
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. 2%? So no, Dave and Dan, they have their own sort of following here.
But still, I would think that you have a younger audience who will come out to, I say younger, maybe at least something is going to be mid-40s?
Well, yeah, I hope so. And we also seem to attract people that are working in the field. And we have people that just want to come to the convention.
Well, I think it's because you have it during a weekday. A lot of times that the other conventions are the weekends, and so you have the amateurs and hobbyists. But if you're going to have it during the weekdays, that's when the guys can be off.
I think that's a little – I think that might be a little simplistic for an answer. I think what happens is – you want to go to the place that everybody's going to be.
Sure, of course.
We are right now, and it doesn't mean we're going to be it tomorrow or the next day or next year or the following year. Right now, we're the nightclub where all the hot babes and hot guys want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to go there because all the other hot babes and hot guys are going to be there.
Yeah.
And so you want to be at that party. And we have that party going right now. And again, like I said, it doesn't mean we're going to have it in the future, and where we don't take anything for granted. I don't take anything for granted in this. You know, we have 1,600 people. Big deal. IBM had 1,500 people for 4 or 5 years in a row. And Blackpool has 3,000. And so, you know, I look at it still as we're trying to win this every single year. We're trying to do something to shake it up every single year. And that's part of the game for us.
Are you looking further into the future as we start to kind of wrap up over here, as far as beyond the 25th, as far as conventions goes? You were just saying that you are going to be talking about the future of the magazine at that time, but then do you have a 3-year plan beyond that, perhaps to have a 28th or 27th Magic Live?
Well, they're not 27th Magic Live. We have done 7, and this will be our 8th.
Well, I mean 27th, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, the 9th and 10th one are on the books. And as we see, because we don't design one convention, we design 2 at a time, 3 sometimes. And so we have these boards and we sort of build this thing and you go, that doesn't quite work for us this year. And we'll take that whole segment and say, let's put it over here and, you know, in a future convention. And then we'll come back to it. And you take something like Tales of Terror. Tales of Terror were on the board. It was, you know, the idea of telling those embarrassing moments, telling those crazy things that happened, the screw ups. And we had it on the board and we said, it just doesn't work. We don't seem to have it designed. It's just not there. And then somebody canceled out one day before. One of our speakers canceled out and we had 30-40 minutes. Well, actually 20-30 minutes. And we went and said, let's do Tales of Terror. But we didn't even call it that then. And, we just got 8 or 9 people. Martin Lewis, Michael Lamar, all these people, we could just line them up, grab them that day and said, you have a horror story. Yes. Great. Yeah. We're just going to have you walk out. Hi, my name's Michael Lamar. And one time I was doing a show and he tells this story and then he just walks off stage. And then the next guy walks out and says, hi, I'm Martin Lewis. And I was doing this. And this was 20 minutes and the audience loved it. So the following year we said, well, let's develop it the way we wanted to develop it. And we decided it was going to be a campfire. And Matt King was going to be a Boy Scout. And he was going to have a tent, and we got as many Christmas trees as we could find, and we littered the stage with them, and we sprayed pine scent into the air, and we brought the lights down and had a campfire look going, and you were handed s'mores as you walked in the door. And Mac did his tent trick and said, inside here's something really scary. And everybody goes, yeah, the bear. No, it was Max Maven in a Boy Scout shoe, outfit, black shorts and knee socks and a little Smokey the Bear hat. And he just stands there and looks out at the audience kind of pissed off. And Max says, I told you it was really scary. And then people just came out and everybody kind of, you know, you saw the trees shaking in the background and David Williamson comes out zipping up his pants going, oh yeah, hey, I got a story. And you say, wow, telling the stories was the basic idea. Taking it to a point of where it's an event, that's what we try to do. And thank gosh, we have the budget to do that with. You know, we brought in 4 pallets of Christmas trees to make that work. And that's the other thing. We load out, we're now on pallets, and I think it takes 35 pallets, 4 trips, to go into the Orleans. And so, you know, it's a different game for us. Magic Live is just a different game, and sometimes I wish we could just throw a nice 250 boutique convention and have 5 lectures and do all of that, but
yeah,
that wouldn't be fun for me, and I wouldn't get to draw on the dry erase board all day long for weeks.
And beat yourself up all the time, but then the success after it's over, I mean, the glow, the afterglow has to be just, that was satisfying, you know?
It is fun, but there is also a slight remorse, and the remorse is that I recruited Rory for the very first one, and he says, well, what kind of convention do you want to do? And I said, I want to do a convention that we would want to go to. And the remorse is that we don't get to go to Magic Live. We don't get to see as much at Magic Live as other people. There are shows I watch on video, and some things I never get to see because we didn't record them. And I think it was in 2013, my old friend Rick Gerber, the Anheuser-Busch magician.
Right.
He runs up to me in the middle of the convention and he just looks at me and he says, Stan, this is great. you have to come to one of these. And you go, yeah, okay. So, yeah, so there you go. So anyway, the future of Magic conventions, I think, is still yet to be written, because looking for people to rewrite it. And here's the thing. You know, a TOM group comes up and says, hey, we want to do something totally different. It's hard for them to get the people to support it because nobody knows how good it's going to be. And we were fortunate enough, even in our very first magazine, people said, I came to it because Magic Magazine was a quality product. Mm-hmm. So I thought you might do a quality thing. People signed up for Magic Magazine because they thought my newsletter was a quality product. Well, you got to start somewhere. And at TOM, just like you say, the group that tries to do it this year can't do it next year because it's somebody else's group. And I don't know. I'm rambling now. You can edit this all out.
Well, no, that is a good place probably to end over here. And I thank you for the highlights and everything that you've shared with us as well. And, of course, I've asked you before about what your magic word is. And actually, you've already espoused what your passion is. And so what would
magic
be your...
word better.
What's that?
Magic word is better.
Better.
What fun is doing something if you can't do it better?
Good point. We'll leave it with that.
Leave it there.
That's great. Better. Great word. Thank you very much. That was Stan Allen for the Magic Word Podcast. I appreciate you being on here, buddy. And, of course, this is Scotty. Well, you can tell we had quite a few things to talk about, and we could have continued this discussion for quite a bit longer, but I try to keep these as close to an hour as I can. But there were a lot of threads we certainly could have followed, and perhaps in future podcasts we might go down those roads into those rabbit holes. But I hope that you enjoyed the conversation as much as I enjoyed chatting with Stan about them. You'll also notice, of course, there were a few audio glitches in there, to which I must apologize, but we were on a Skype call, and those kinds of dropouts happen occasionally whenever that you're using Skype. I edited out quite a bit in order to try to make it as listenable, that's a word, as possible, but I felt that the points that he was making in many of those cases were important enough that I wanted to leave that in, and so the problems with the audio hopefully was not as bad as it could have been had I left everything in, and that it did not disturb your listening pleasure and enjoyment of the conversation. Well, I want to wish you and yours a happy holiday this season, and I hope that you continue to listen to the Magic Word Podcast as we go into this next year and into the future. I'm inspired by Stan from the fact that he's going to be soon celebrating 25 years, and I can certainly appreciate the deadlines that he's up against, trying to get something done before the end of the month. And in my case, I'm trying to get something done every week before the podcast released out here each Thursday. So there's a lot of time that's taken in order to put these together and to produce them. And so again, I want to thank all of my guests over this past year, and in fact, over the past several years, who have been shared the microphone here with me on the Magic Word. And so as we go into this holiday season, I think it's important that you stay well, get booked, and do it better. This is Scotty out.